Okay, so we've taken a quick skim of Mizmor Chaf, chapter 20 of Tehillim. Based on what you've seen, when would you anticipate this Mizmor having been recited? Okay, so here's a very specific possibility is David is going out to war with Goliath, and he's engaging this very particular battle, and we're concerned about him being answered there, and a major theme in that battle is David proclaiming Shem Hashem in military context, and we'll certainly come back to that. So great, that was an interesting hypothesis, and connected to the text, because you see Shem Hashem or Shem Elokeinu three times in total in this nine-verse Mizmor. So that's one hypothesis. Are there other thoughts or theories? So where this Mizmor might have come from? So another hypothesis is by the Plishtim in general, right? You know, Goliath being one local example, but maybe the Plishtim generally, they're major enemies of David and his kingship.
And for a long time.
Right, throughout Sefer Shmuel, we see consistent examples of the Plishtim being the main enemies, and characteristically, they have Rechav and Susim. They have, you know, horses and chariots, and so this may be more generally about them. Basically speaking, the context, if we're focusing on military, you know, battles, we're basically in the right camp, right? Lots of the classical commentaries read this Mizmor, and they say it's either the nation is sort of singing to David as he is going out to war, or David in Yerushalayim is singing to his soldiers as they go out to war. Most of the commentaries fall into one of those two camps. You do have a few who try to zone in a little bit more specifically on a particular battle. Malbim, for example, tries to ground it in one very particular military operation, but it doesn't seem to reference a specific operation. More generally, it's a song to encourage you out to war. And the song basically comes in two parts. The conclusion we'll leave for a little bit later. Part one is the element of what seems to be prayer, but really more of a blessing if you read it closely, right? Yancha Hashem b'yom tzara, yisagef Hashem al Yaakov. I am speaking, I the singer, am speaking to you, the soldier, and I am blessing you. It's really a blessing, maybe more than a prayer. Like, may you be answered in this time. May Hashem make you strong and fortify you. May he send his help for you. So it's somewhat of a blessing. The context seems to be one where, you know, you only really, you know, need a blessing when things aren't exactly so certain in, you know, the natural world, so I need to rely on a blessing. But I'm blessing the soldiers as they go, and that they should be helped by Hashem. And the second half of the Mizmor, starting from either Vav or Zion, I really think Zion probably is the better shift, but I'm not 100% sure. You get to Pasuk Zion, now I know, Ataya Dati Ki Hoshia Hashem in Mishicho, now I know that Hashem has saved his anointed one, and that seems to be not a blessing on you shall be saved in the future, but a praise for having saved in the past. Seems to be, it's always a little bit unclear how seriously to take future tense versus past tense in a Perek of Tehillim, for reasons we talked a little bit about last week. But it sounds like this is a response. Now, Atan, now I know something has changed, and I'm now confident in or thankful for the salvation that Hashem promised. I think the way we'll tackle this Mizmor is a little bit different than last week. Last week, we focused primarily on the structure and how the pieces of the structure moved from one to the other and how that informed the meaning of the Mizmor. I think what we'll do today is focus a little bit more on some local interpretive questions, some individual words or turns of phrase that will combine to, I think, reflect a perspective on the major question. Right? And the major question is, how do we understand, you know, Ataya Dati? How do we start to feel or know that Hashem's salvation is coming, right? In the first part of the Mizmor, we're not sure of that. In the second part, we are. So how do we get to that second part? How do we come to that confidence in Hashem's salvation? And the different details we'll note throughout the Mizmor, I think, will help fit that overall issue as we read. So let's read, and we'll start just pointing out some details about the text locally, you know, pasuk by pasuk first, and then we'll step back and try to put together a little bit of a larger thesis. So, starting from the beginning, the first pasuk is introductory. Though you should know, there's a bit of a pun there, right? When it says la minatzeach, so we see that at the beginning of every mizmor, but the word minatzeach might be a pun on the word Netzach in the sense of victory, right? Nitzachon. So it, maybe there's a pun there. I'm not sure. Some commentaries point out that there's that that pun, and some also point out that Mizmor LeDavid might be a Mizmor recited to David as he went out to war. So it's kind of a victory psalm, a victory prayer that is announced before we head out to battle. Yancha Hashem b'yom tzara. You'll note Yancha is bolded, and that's because the shoresh of being answered appears three times in the Mizmor, once in the beginning, Pasuk Bet, one in the middle, Pasuk Zayin, one at the end, Pasuk Yud. So it's a theme that kind of repeats itself. We're focusing on being answered by Hashem. And what literary scholars would call that is either an envelope structure, that it begins and ends with the same theme, so we're sort of, you know, bracketing everything that comes within. If there was more evidence, maybe you'd call it a chiasm, but that's a little bit fancier than what we're going to see right now. So Hashem should answer you in the day of trouble. The day of trouble maybe is a military day, a day you're being attacked or at war. Yisagev Hashem Elohei Yaakov. May the name of the God of Yaakov fortify you. So we have two questions you could ask here. First of all, what does it mean for a name to fortify you? That itself is a bit of an odd detail. Names don't fortify. Elohei Yaakov, of course Hashem could protect us. What is the name doing here? So name might be... And you see this a little bit throughout Tanakh more generally, that sometimes you refer to the name of Hashem to mean Hashem itself. So, for example, one of the purpose of building the Beit HaMikdash is L'shakin Shemo Sham. Hashem's name will dwell there. What does it mean for a name to dwell in a place? It doesn't mean anything, but the name of Hashem kind of represents Hashem. In some sense, especially Hashem has no physical features. We don't see or engage with Hashem directly. We only engage by speaking or thinking about Him. So His name is really the entryway to understanding Hashem. And the second question we can now ask about Shem Elokei Yaakov, how is the name of Elokei Yaakov going to help us, is why Yaakov? Why would Yaakov be the one to reference here? Okay, so definitely the best answer, the one I love the most, Yaakov's life is full of troubles, right? What are some of the troubles Yaakov has in his life? We're going to get to those in Parshat Shavuah very soon. Esav is one. Who else? Lavan, his father. Right, exactly. Lavan doesn't treat him very well either. What else?
His children.
So his children, and you can name multiple things here, right? Reuven is a troublesome child in some ways. You have trouble with Dinah. She's not the cause of the trouble, but she certainly gets into trouble. And then Shimon and Levi exacerbate that problem, perhaps. Then Yosef gets sold. Yaakov gets down to Mitzrayim, and Paro says, oh, how's it going? You know, how are you? How is your life? And Yaakov says, everything's terrible. It's just been awful for decades, right? Yaakov doesn't have a great life. So you think about Yaakov, and he was in trouble, and that maybe is a little bit inspirational for us in ways that we'll come back to in more detail. But we can start looking at some of these sources now, starting from source number 2 on page 2, and we'll turn back to the Mizmor in just a little bit. So Radak is bothered by this Yaakov question. And his first answer is, yeah, Amar Elokei Yaakov, Levisha Ra'a Yaakov Atzmo, Bitsaru Yoter Me Avraham de Yitzchak. He had way more troubles in his life than Avraham and Yitzchak. Avraham has some, you know, it's Parshat Lach Lecha this week, so he has some famines, he has some trials. Yitzchak also was bothered by Grar, some troubles there, but, and Yaakov and Esav having some conflict is also definitely a problem. He's tricked, but not to the same degree that Yaakov really is the one who represents trouble. It's no coincidence that Yaakov is the forefather we associate most with Mariv, right? The tefillah at night, the tefillah at time of uncertainty. And he even quotes a pasuk, right? There are psukim, where Yaakov said, refers to Hashem as Ha'unau ti be'et sarati, or something like that. The one who answers me in my time of trouble. So Yaakov is answered in a time of trouble, we hope, and so we are too, or we hope to be as well. Second possibility Radak mentions is that Yaakov was our forefather alone, meaning as opposed to Abraham and Yitzchak, who each have a child who is not part of the fold, right? In different ways, Yishmael and Esav are kind of removed from the chain. In Yaakov is our first forefather, who's really our forefather. And ours, you know, alone, not the forefather of anyone else. And so that might be a reason to mention Yaakov as well, though it's unclear what that has to do with being answered in a time of trouble. There might be something here about, you know, Jewish unity, that there's something about the totality of the Jewish people, as opposed to others who might be introduced, that might be relevant. And the third, and maybe this is closest to pshat, but the one that's least emotionally resonant, is that Yaakov is just a word that means the Jewish people. Elokei Yaakov is the same thing as saying, you know, B'nai Yisrael. Why B'nai Yisrael and not B'nai Avraham? Because, you know, we are the nation B'nai Yisrael, that's our name. And so Yaakov might be just a synonym for that. But I like this first answer a lot, because it starts off the Mizmor saying, we will be answered in a time of trouble. Why? Because our forefathers were also answered in a time of trouble. And that's baked into our spiritual DNA, that Hashem comes and saves us in a time of need. This is a little bit more explicit in the following midrash, in source number 3. Yancha Hashem b'yom tzara. Mahu b'yom tzara? What is the day of trouble? And the Gemara gives a mashal. Or the midrash, gives a mashal. Amar Reish Lakish, lema hadavar domeh. What is it comparable to? Leisha sheyeshva al hamashber leled vaita mitzeret leled. A woman is having a painful childbirth, right? The metaphor of childbirth we'll have to unpack in just a second. But right now, just a woman's in pain in childbirth. Amru, and they told her, Misha ana etimech hu ya'ane otach. The one who answered your mother, who also in childbirth gave birth to you, so too should you be answered as you give birth to others. And so by analogy, says the Midrash, Kach amar David li Yisrael, Misha ana li Yaakov hu ya'ane etchem. The one who answered Yaakov should also answer you in the same way. Our heirs and our forefathers were answered, and we have reason to expect that as well here. Mahi pelel Yaakov. What did Yaakov pray? Ve'asesha mizbeach l'kel ha'oneu ti be'ed tzarati. Right, that pasuk there, b'yom tzara, again, in my time of trouble. So too, avatayan ha'ashem b'yom tzara, yisagef ha'ashem alo ha'yakov. So too, you should be answered just as Yaakov was, just as our forefathers were, and especially Yaakov, who really embodies those kinds of tzarot. A slightly different spin comes from Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, who provides maybe a slightly different angle on this idea of shame, Elokei Yaakov. I'm borrowing here from the English translation, which is on the shelf, actually, in the Beit Midrash here. I tried to take a peek at it at some point during preparation. The Lord will give you help once your distress has become urgent. So already, he picks up on something earlier in the pasuk. It's not Hashem should answer you whenever. You don't automatically get what you want as soon as you want it. But when the going gets tough, you count on Hashem. B'yom tzara, when things are really urgent, that's what matters. But, says Rav Hirsch, it is the shame, the recognition, awareness of, and trust in the Elokei Yaakov, in God as revealed to Jacob in his trials and tribulations, which will give you the inner exaltation, he understands misgav to mean elevated and not protected, that you must have in order to persevere until help will come at last. So, how do we feel this, you know, confidence in Hashem? It's the awareness that Hashem has answered Yaakov in the past and will answer us now as well. And the shame, the point of referencing the word shame, is that it builds that recognition, the focus on Yaakov's story, Yaakov's history, and his relationship with Hashem, where he was protected by him, becomes very important. If we go back to that shame point, we go back to the page number 1 and look at the Mizmor as a whole, and we actually see that shame Elokim, or shame Hashem, appears a few times, 3 times in the Mizmor, in Psukim 2, 6, and 8. Shame Elokei Yaakov, Shame Elokeinu, and Shame Hashem Elokeinu Nazkir. So we think about Hashem Elokei Yaakov, and we keep going back to the shame. We reference Shame Hashem. We talk about Shame Hashem. The more we say Hashem, the more we talk about Hashem, the more we talk about His greatness and His protection of us, that is already one ingredient to building the confidence in Hashem's salvation that we're going to see. And I think also the fact that it spread throughout the Mizmor suggests that it's a permeating, you know, thesis of the Mizmor. We keep coming back to Shem Elokeinu Nazkir, Shem Elokeinu Nidgol, let's rally around Hashem, let's talk about Hashem, and that builds some of that confidence. Okay, so that was all part of explaining Shem Elokei Yaakov back in Pasuk Bet. We continue with Pasuk Gimel. Yishlach Ezrachami Kodesh, he will send his aid from the Kodesh, meaning probably from the Mikdash, some Rishonim think from Shamayim, which is, you know, his Makom Kadsho, in his place of holiness, he sends his aid. And Umitzion Yisadeka, and from Tzion, from Yerushalayim, he will help you. That's why some, the Malbim, I think in particular, sees a reference to sending sort of allies to help David from Yerushalayim. So the singers are in Yerushalayim, maybe they're in the Mikdash, and they're, you know, hoping for aid to be sent from them out to the armies. Yizkor kol min chotecha volatcha yedashine sela. May he remember all of your minachot and olot. So that might just mean generic korbanot. All the korbanot that we offer, may Hashem remember them and may they be pleasing before him, with the assumption, I think, being, and therefore he'll help you in the zechut of the korbanot. The Ibn Ezra, I think in source number 5, we don't need to read it inside, but Ibn Ezra says, this is a proof that they used to offer extra korbanot before going up to war. There's no mitzvah to offer a korban before you go to war, but if you want to bring Hashem's favor down, you might want to offer some extra korbanot nedava, some extra voluntary korbanot to earn some of that extra you know, mojo, extra zechut, to get you to that victory. And we see a shift also here, even within this prayer, because we get a little bit more confident and ambitious after this. You'll see the word kol, or the letters kaf lamed, appear four times in these three psukim. You see a kol minchotecha, and so what's going to happen? First of all, yitain lecha chilvavecha v'chol atatcha yimalei. Everything you want. So it's not just a little bit of help that Hashem sends you from a distance, from the Kodesh, from Tzion. Hashem is going to give you what you want. We're getting bolder in our requests. May Hashem give you everything that you want. And then, nerananabishu atecha uvshem alokenu nidgol. You should rejoice and sing in victory, rally around the name of God. Yimalei Hashem kol mishalotecha. So now he's not sending help, he is the help. Hashem himself is fulfilling all of your desires. So before we just wanted a little bit of help in war, but once we start talking about our korbanot, the extra zichuyot that we bring to the table, all of a sudden we're getting bolder. Now we're starting to ask for all of our requests to be answered, everything that we need. This line, Yimalei Hashem kol mishalotecha, for me is a money line. I don't have a good term for this in my own study of Tehillim, but there are some lines in Tehillim that just stick out to you, that you just notice, first of all, and they're resonant. When you could say in Tefillah, Yimalei Hashem kol mishalotecha, that's amazing. That's such a resonant and powerful line. Are you suggesting you're agreeing, right? To be able to daven that. It's also, I think, a little bit reflected just in the style of the Mizmor. So, for example, Pasuk Vav, you know, is the end of one section, the beginning of another. So at the end of a section, to have a line like that, to be able to pray that all of our requests or all of your David HaMelech's requests to be answered is incredible. And at that point, we transition. And now we're talking about our confidence in Hashem's salvation post facto. One major question we'll have to answer is what changed or what happened such that before we were praying for Hashem to answer us, and now we talk as though Hashem already did. Ki hoshia Hashem mishicho. Hashem already answered and saved his anointed one. And we're still a little bit of future tense. Hashem ya'aneu mishmei kodesho. May he continue to answer him from shmei kodesho. Will he continue to have Yeshua? And we see the shoresh of Yeshua, I think four times in the Mizmor, starting from Pasuk Vav, it goes down four more times. I'd like to italicize them. I don't think they're so clear on the sheet, but if you see a few examples of italicized words, those all have that same sentiment here. There are a couple of ways to try to explain what changed now. The first way is almost historical. So it involves basically saying that the Mizmor was being recited at one particular time, and there's almost a deliberate gap between the first half and the second half. First, the Levi'im and the Beit HaMikdash saying up till Pasuk Vav, then maybe they even stopped, right? They were just praying. Then they heard the news, Ki Hoshia Hashem Mishicho, that David was actually saved, and they composed a Thanksgiving addition to the song. And it's all part of, you know, this one historical moment. You start with the prayer, then you come later to the salvation from the same event, and they're really two halves that aren't related to each other. They're related to each other in as much as they're both about the same event, but you aren't saying them at the same time. At the time that I'm feeling that I'm praying or blessing for salvation, I'm not thinking for salvation. And by the time I'm thinking, I don't need to say anymore, Hashem, save me from the time of trouble, because the time of trouble is already past. That's one, you know, approach you could have to this. Atayadati, now I know because the salvation already happened. And some of the commentaries, Malvim, among others, take that tack, that really this was just later on in the same event. I think another possibility, though, is that we're reflecting here on the idea of bitachon, of trust. It's not that atayadati, because things have changed right now, that I've seen some sign that you'll be saved, or that I've seen the historical event that you've been saved, but rather, now I know, now I feel confident that you will save in the future. We'll have to see why that would have happened, but I think the first hint comes from Pasuk Chet. Eile v'arechev, ve'eile v'asusim, v'anachnu b'shem Hashem Elokeinu nazkir. These come with their horses, their chariots. These come with their horses. But we trust in the name of Hashem. Or we mention or swear in the name of Hashem. The word zachar here, nazkir, goes back a little bit to Pasuk Dalet, to yizkor kol minchotecha. A lot of the language here is getting repeated, poetically speaking. So what are we referencing when we talk about chariots and horses. These are obviously the big weapons that the Assyria's army in the time of Tanakh has chariots and horses. You know, you may also have, you know, bowmen and other tools, but chariots are really, really, you know, the sign of strength. We mentioned the Plishtim certainly have them, and there are other events in Tanakh also that do. Were you thinking along those lines, or? Right, you know, we're talking about weaponry. These are the big weapons. You see these charging at you in battle. You look at the picture on the cover page here. If you see that charging at you, you are petrified, because that is the sign of a strong, powerful army. But we've seen that before in Tanakh. We mentioned it by the Plishtim, but there's maybe one or two other examples. You could jump ahead, I think, to source number 9, and we'll come back to some of the other ones in a second. So source number 9 is from Devarim. It's telling you about the halachot of going out to war. When you go out to war on your enemies, vereita sus varechev, you'll see the horses and chariots. Am rav bimcha, a mighty large army attacking you. Lo tiramehem, don't be afraid of them. And it tries to tell you why. Why should you not be afraid? Ki Hashem alokecha imach, Hashem, your God, is with you. So that's already good, right? We could be reminded, Shem Elokeinu, we've said this before, the more you think about, talk about Hashem, the more confident you'll be. And Hama'alcha me'eretz Mitzrayim. I think that might be the key. Hashem who took us out of Egypt. The Hashem who took us out of Egypt has already demonstrated his strength to us in the past, to us as a nation. And so we know that he has that strength. And it's even more explicit if we look at source number 10, which is a couple of psukim from Shirat Hayam, which we also say in Psukim Dezemer every day, incidentally. Az Ashir Moshe, Bnei Yisrael, Az Yishir HaZot, what's the song? Ashir El Hashem Ki Ga'oga, Sus V'Rochvo, Ramav Hayam. The horse and its rider, or maybe its chariot, were thrown into the sea. And towards the end of the song, we see these references back to the Mikdash. We mentioned before, Makom Kadsho, Hashem's salvation comes from the Mikdash, while in Shirat Hayam it does too. And Kriyat Yamsuf, they're also being saved, and there's then this reference to being planted in the Mikdash, and being there merits or warrants the salvation. Tivi'imo v'titeimo b'har nachalatcha, machon l'shiftecha ba'alta Hashem, Mikdash Hashem konenu yadecha. And you go back to the end of the Mizmor, Hashem Oshia Hamelech Yaninu Yom Kareinu, Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Ba'ed. Hashem's salvation, Hashem's malchut, his majesty and his kingship is established by his defeat of other armies and by his defeat of what appear to be insurmountable foreign forces. And again, Kivasus Paro, Berechvo, Varashav, at the chariot, with the legions, and they were all drowned in the water and the Jewish people passed through. I think when you see Sus Varechev and we're reminded of these historical legacies, that, I think, is the key, the secret of the Mizmor, to how we achieve that confidence in Hashem's salvation. So we've seen already maybe two or three indications. We see Yaakov, and we remember that Yaakov himself was saved. Now we see, also as a nation, Hashem has done similar things. Every time we're faced with a massive army, we're able to defeat it. Even in this week's Parsha, Avram's able to defeat large forces. Then we get to Mitzrayim, and again we defeat horses and chariots. In Devarim, we're reminded consistently that Hashem, the one who brought us out of Egypt, the one who saved Yaakov, he is the one who is able to save us now. So of course we'll be confident in that Hashem, the Shem Hashem who we keep referencing over and over, because he keeps guaranteeing our salvation, and we keep seeing moments and manifestations of that salvation. The imagery that the Malbim uses in Source 11 I love, because I think it emphasizes this theme. He goes back to an earlier Pasuk, but I think emphasizing this notion. We see the phrase, V'shem Elokeinu Nidgol, and he thinks that Nidgol refers to a degel, a banner. And he describes God as a general who leads an army. Eid nasa degel milchama, yeh degel b'shem Hashem. May the banner that you lead your army with be the banner of Hashem. Shehashem yeh sar hachayil haolich b'rosham. God is the warrior, the general, the leader of the army who is charging before us. And he's holding his banner, and we are charging after him. When we see Hashem in front of us, carrying that banner and leading us in victory, so that will certainly trump any susan, any rechev that we might see. We get to this last pasuk, which is the conclusion. And I call it a conclusion because I actually think it doesn't fit the previous couple of psukim, but I think it fits the overall idea of this mizmor. Hashem Hoshia, Hamelech Ya'aneinu V'yom Karein. So just as a matter of text, it's a little bit unclear. I already biased you by reading it out loud. I shouldn't have. Where does the comma go in this pasuk?
What is left?
The comma. Yeah. If you have to separate it into, you know, two sentences or two parts. So there's an ambiguity in the pasuk, right? You could read it the way that the Trump reads it, right? If you look at the cantillation notes in a Chumash, you'll see there's a pause after Hoshea. And every, you know, when people recite this pasuk, they'll generally read it this way. Hashem Hoshea, Hashem saved or saves. HaMelech, meaning Hashem, will answer on the day that we call. So this is kind of our cry after the whole mizmor. We've had the blessing and the prayer, and then we have the confidence and the thanksgiving in some sense. And now this is a general, you know, cry to the people. We should all call out to Hashem in our time of need. It generalizes this from a local historical event to a broad one. You could also read it in more particular ways and say the Melech isn't Hashem, but actually is David, or the king in this army. And you can see this in one of two ways. There are some literary readers of this mizmor. They say, Hashem Hoshia HaMelech. Hashem saved the king. In this mizmor, we just talked about Hashem saving the king. Hashem has saved the king, or will save the king. Ya'ani Nuvim Kareinu. May he also answer us when we call. Just like Hashem saved the king, he should also answer us. You also have this interesting Malbim, which I put in source number 8, where he reads also the Malach refers to the king, and we'll jump for me in the... let's start from the beginning. Pasuk zem mitzayin nosei kol ha-ma'amar. This pasuk expresses the idea of the whole paragraph. If you just read this pasuk, you're just with this idea, you've got the whole thing. What's the idea? Shebiyom kareinu, on the day that we call out, on the day that we cry out to Hashem in need, ya'aninu ha-melech Hashem Hoshia. So you have to read the pasuk almost backwards. Hashem Hoshia, in quotes, Hashem saves, ha-melech ya'aninu, the king will tell us, biyom kareinu, on the day that we call. So we'll call out to Hashem, be'et kareinu bitfila ba'ad ha-melech David, on the time that we call out in prayer, aneni ha-melech David lemor, David will respond, and he'll say, Hashem Hoshia. In other words, eini boteach lo b'chai o b'lo b'choach, I don't trust in armies or in strength. It's a rhyme there, it's nice. Eini boteach lo b'chai o b'lo b'choach, rak b'yishuat Hashem. I only trust the Yeshua of Hashem. Kichein hayash Hashem Hoshio levado. Because it was in fact the case that Hashem has saved. And this thesis statement for the mizmor, I think, works really nicely in light of what we said. David HaMelech, in his life, experienced Hashem's salvation. He also knows that Hashem has saved our ancestors in the past. Yaakov, the first of us, and the first who was representative of the entire nation of Bnei Israel. And Bnei Israel as they left Egypt. There's a consistent pattern throughout history of Hashem saving us in times of need. And he experiences it himself. So anytime we call out to Hashem, David's there reminding us. You should know Hashem saves. It's happened hundreds of times before, and it will continue to happen again. Maybe just to conclude, I'll note, in light of what we saw last week. Last week we saw Mizmor Vav. And in Mizmor Vav, the crying was not coming from this place of confidence. We called out to Hashem from a place of weakness, from a place of deprivation. We're lying in our bed, which is soaked with our sweat and our tears. And we, even then, weren't exactly clear on where any sense of confidence in salvation came from. The tone of this mizmor, I think, is quite different. Here the tone is of confidence and of victory. And we're blessing you that Hashem should answer you, but in the back of our minds, we know that that's the case. We keep talking about Hashem as the one who has saved us in all these moments in our personal lives and in our national lives. And so, what do we say? Hashem Hoshia HaMelech Aninu Vim Kareinu? We're saying, we know that Hashem has always saved us and consistently saved us. No matter what sus v'rechem, no matter what opposition we might face, we can trust that because it's happened time and time again, and we know that we will be that next step in that chain of Hashem's salvation. I'll leave it here because I think this is a fine place to end.